All right, today is Saturday, October the 16th, 1993, and my name is Rick Bradley, and I'm here in Bloomington, I believe it is, Minnesota, with former pitcher Harold Harris High Vandenberg. Hi, how you doing?
That's correct.
First thing I want to ask you, the books conflict. What year were you born, 1906 or 1911?
I was born in March 17th, 1906. I was a St. Patrick's Day baby.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, told me when you're...
I think that the mistake made in my age was the fact that when I signed Minneapolis, they got it down wrong there, and that made me a whole lot younger, which was very good.
It was good, yeah. It wasn't like a Dizzy Dean story where he gave everybody a different scoop then, huh?
No.
They said you were born in Abilene at the time when there were still cowboys and Indians running around.
Well, I saw Fort Clark where they had all the soldiers that come through the town. It took a whole day for the troops to get through there. And when I was a little kid, I used to watch them. They come through with their horses. They were all horse-drawn cannons and everything. And it was quite a sight. Some of the officers had their swords on their side. And everything was all not mechanized like it is now. There was horses and pulling. And they stopped at the hardware there. They had big tanks up. They gave them water to drink and that kept it on, kept going.
How'd you get from Abilene up here to Minnesota?
The what?
How did you get from Abilene to Minnesota? I guess you grew up here.
Well, my father died when I was about 3 or 4 years old. I can just faintly remember him. And at that time, he'd been working long hours, and he come down with, I thought it was pneumonia from what I could remember, but it turned into consumption. That's what they called it then. And he died from consumption. But I never really had a father because he kept away from us from one side of the house to the other. Mm-hmm. So we come up, my mother took us kids afterwards, my brother and I, and moved to Minneapolis because her girlfriend, her very dear girlfriend, was here and had to ask her if she wanted to come up to Minneapolis and work. So she packed us kids up, and here we ended up in Minneapolis. So actually, I was raised in Minnesota, born in Abilene, and that's the way we started.
Okay. How'd you get started playing baseball?
Well, at the old George Washington School over on 38th and 3rd Avenue, the George Washington School, they had a big lot out there, and those kids come out and play ball there all the time. And I'm coming from there. I think it was Central High School. Kids were out there playing. Somebody hit a ball way out there, and I was coming up the sidewalk. I run over and caught the ball and threw it all the way into the second base. And the coach that I had at Roosevelt High School, J.C. Henderson, come running over and asked my name and everything, and I guess he thought he could get me at Central High School. But we moved over in the Roosevelt district, and that's I had to go to Roosevelt High School. That's the school that I left after 3 years. Should I tell you about?
Please do.
What happened? My mind is starting to wonder again. Can you hold it a minute? At Roosevelt? Well, at Roosevelt, I was changing schools at that time after growing up a little more. I ended up at playing for... Kick it. At Roosevelt, I was captain of football, captain of basketball, and we didn't have any captains of baseball, so I didn't make that. Nobody did. We just played baseball. And that's practically where I got my start playing baseball, coming up from grade school. I pitched at grade school, seventh grade, and had moved from the George Washington School over into the Longfellow School District, where I pitched for a city championship in grade school. But we lost the game. But from there, I went to Roosevelt High School and caught up with my old, the old coach from Central High School that I caught the ball out way out in that center field and threw it into second base. I guess that comes in all right.
Mm-hmm.
And where are we going to carry on from there?
Well, this is high school baseball, and then after high school baseball, then we've got the scrapbook in front of us. Where did you go from there?
After high school, during my vacation, went out and played semi-pro baseball. We got $25 to $35 a game. It depends where the who you happen to get the best offer from.
Mm-hmm.
So I pitched a lot of baseball around these small towns like Springfield. Sanborn was the first town, and that was a Western mini league. And but it was called the Brown, Wright, and Redwood district, and that was all run by umpires, Northwest Umpires Association in Minneapolis. And they got us, sent us out for most of our jobs, it's like that. They did call in, want a pitcher for a small town. And they were very enthusiastic at that time. The people, you know, those farmers, they, well, like if you went up in Dakota and pitched, those farmers were walking around with dollar bills, $20 bills hanging out of their pockets, want to bet this and bet that.
Oh.
And we always got our $35, and that was it.
Now, what, this was like the middle 20s then?
What?
The year was what, middle 20s, 19...
Now that was in the 27, 28, around 1927, 1928.
$35 a game, is that pretty good money at that time? Or?
Oh, that was $1 million. That's about as bad as when I started broke into Minneapolis. I signed a contract for around $400 a month, I think it was, or less than that. And
yeah.
That sounded like $1 million.
Yeah.
Of course, my first check, I went down and bought myself a car.
Uh-huh. What'd you buy?
It was a Hudson.
Brand new?
No, used. I paid $400 for it. I had a lot of money. But I paid cash,
uh-huh.
My whole salary. I had to have a car.
So
where do we go from here?
Well, we're playing semi-pro ball, and then how do we go, or maybe we went straight from semi-pro then to signing with Minneapolis about 1930?
I was talking to my mother and my stepdad. See, my mother married again then. That's after I came back. I'd been up in the harvest fields working in the harvest too before that, you know, and then come back in pitching baseball. But I told my mother I was going to go over to the baseball park and see if I couldn't get a tryout with the Minneapolis Ball Club. She said, "Oh, do you think you can do that?" I said, "Well, I'll try." So I walked into the ballpark, and Bill Myers was the manager of the club at that time. And there was a left-handed pitcher, forget his name, he was just about through, his arm was gone.
Mm-hmm.
But Bill Myers got his glove, and I introduced myself to Bill Myers and told him I'd like to play baseball, professional baseball. And George Dumont was the pitcher, a right-handed pitcher. He was had a heck of a curveball, and that, I guess that's what got him through baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, "Well, let's get the kid a tryout." So Bill Myers got his glove. He wears a great big, you know, I guess he wore the biggest catcher's glove of any catcher in baseball. But he worked me out for a while, and I was popping that glove, and he reached out for a ball, and I took his glove off his hand, that big floppy glove of his. And he told me, he said, "You go on up the office and see Mike Kelly and get signed up." So I went up there and told Mike Kelly, I said, introduced myself to Mike Kelly, and I said, I was pretty scared when I walked in there.
Yeah,
I said, "I want to play baseball," and Bill Myers told me to come up here and get signed up. And Kelly was very nice about it, and he signed me up. And so when spring training came in 30, they took me to this camp with them, and that's where I run into Bill Meyer, or Bill, run into names. That's where I met in spring training, Hot Springs, Arkansas, was our training camp. And then Al Simmons was working out down there, getting in shape for the athletics, for the club he played with. We had an exhibition game one day, and I was the pitcher for the game, and they were feeding the lamb to the wolves. So the bases were loaded, and Simmons was up the plate, and he kind of confused me because he kept walking around in the box all the time. He moved in and out while you're winding up and trying to throw the ball. But I struck him out with the bases loaded, and he came up to me afterwards and said, "Hey, son," he said, "I want to tell you one thing." He said, "People come out here to watch me hit home runs." And he said, "You struck me out." I said, "Well, Al, you know, I'm only a rookie here." And I said, "I'm trying to make this darn ball club." And then he patted me on the back. He said, "That's nice going." He said, "You did a good job." That's the truth.
Now, this was, you struck at Al Simmons, but the team that he was playing, was that the rest of the Philadelphia team at that time, or was it just him with a bunch of guys?
Just him and their leading pitcher, big, tall, I don't remember his name, but I remember the other pitcher.
Was it Grove?
And I told you about the spitball pitcher.
Oh, Burley Grimes.
Burley Grimes. Burley Grimes showed me how to throw a fastball and sail it. Mm-hmm. And that's holding, you know, this one finger, I'd raise this one finger up just like that there, so that the ball would be actually thrown with this two fingers. And it sailed. But with my speed, the thing would rise and sail and sink and did a lot of things for me. I used it against Kansas City every time, and I beat Kansas City every time I pitched against them.
Couldn't figure that out. So other than Burley Grimes, while we're on the subject, who else was, I want to say instrumental, but who taught you?
Well, that was all just the one pitcher. I can't recall his name. Him and Simmons were working out and spending the company's money and having a good time, but still working out and getting in shape. And I was getting in shape, too. Mm-hmm. But I was in shape when I got there, because I was always in good shape, because from playing basketball and football. Yeah. Talking about football, in high school, I was all-city in football, all-city in basketball. I was captain of basketball and captain of football.
Mm-hmm.
I had some trouble at school and told me to sign out of Roosevelt, because I challenged the assistant principal to a battle, and he didn't approve of that. So I went to South High School, and I graduated from South High School. Then my baseball really started then.
What'd your family think about you picking baseball as a career? Because this is, you signed your first pro contract, it's 1930.
My mother didn't pay much attention to that, that we were good kids. That was the main thing. My brother and I, and that was our family. Mm-hmm. She kept us together, and she ruled the roost with an iron hand. Because when Mama said something, she meant business. Because she tanned my little butt one time, and I was running around the furnace and got caught between the water cooler and that, and she fanned my butt till I couldn't talk anymore. But I learned.
What did your, speaking of, you just had the one brother, no sisters?
Just one brother.
Just one brother. And what did your brother wind up doing?
My brother passed away here a few years ago. He was 78 when he died. Mm-hmm. But he kind of went downhill after my mother died.
Was he athletic at all, like you?
No. He was more of a, in radio, he was one of the oldest amateur operators here for amateur operators, one of the oldest ones that I knew of, mm-hmm. or he knew of. Because he studied that all by himself, you know, and learned all that wireless, and he could send and receive. Mm-hmm. Then he got a phone, and he rigged that up. And I didn't dare touch anything in the attic because of how the powerful wires that he had strung up and made. But he made that all by himself. But he was on the mechanical side in everything he done.
Did he come out to the ballpark watch you play?
No, my brother never watched me play ball.
Really? Well, that's amazing. No.
My mother never saw me play ball until the World Series in 45.
Hmm. Well, she picked a good time. You pitched pretty well.
I had my best friend and his wife and my stepdad and my mother mm-hmm. up there as my guest for the World Series. Mm-hmm. They enjoyed it very much. My mother, that's the first time she ever saw me pitch a ball game. Mm-hmm. And my stepdad used to drop off from work and they stop and watch me working out over at South High School. Mm-hmm. That's the old South High School, not the new one.
Let's talk about, you started with Minneapolis, right, in 1930,
yeah.
or actually Bloomington.
Well, I was farmed out to Bloomington my first year.
At the time, were you the property of anybody, or were you just the property of the minor league team? Did you have a tie with the major league?
You belonged to that club, like Minneapolis. I signed with them, and I was the, you know, chattel mortgage or whatever you mm-hmm. want to call it. But if you didn't sign a contract, they'd tell you you can stay home. And maybe they'd do that with some of these ball players getting $1 million now. They'd probably just be staying home the rest of their life if they had fellows like we had to deal with. Yeah. But what else?
So you weren't the property of any?
No, I belonged to Minneapolis.
That
and
was it.
Mike Kelly... sent me a contract, and I didn't sign it, and I stayed home half the season, and that's after I broke in, you know. Mm-hmm. But in 1930, I was farmed out to Bloomington in the 3I League.
All right.
And then after that season was over, I was sitting on the bench in Minneapolis, you know, I hadn't pitched yet, and that was 1931. And I was sent back down to about after half the season. I was pitching batting practice most of the time in Minneapolis in the second year. And then they sent me back down to help out down there again because the manager down there is a good friend of Mike Kelly's and needed help, and he mm-hmm. sent me down there. So I finished the season there again. That 3I League was one powerful league because most of the ball players that went up from there to Detroit, Evansville was Detroit's farm club. And I remember some of those fellows that that I pitched against down there, they went up and were real fast at, you know, playing.
Mm-hmm.
So, punch it. Rest. My first games that I pitched for Minneapolis Ball Club was 32, it was about one half the season was gone. Now, I guess the 1st of July when they started me, and I'd won 7 games in a row. And there's quite a bit of talk with Minneapolis and the fans about the ball club, because Minneapolis looked like they were going to win the pennant. Well, in these games that I pitched, Rube Benton would bring him back into second place, and I'd pitch him back into first place. No, one game. No, he'd pitch him back into a tie mm-hmm. for the league. And then I got a chance to pitch, and they started me, and I kept winning every time, putting him back into first place, or one game ahead of first place. And that's the way Minneapolis won the pennant that year. And there was quite a bit of talk in Newark, which won the pennant in the International League. So that's the year that we played for the Little World Series. And there was a lot of talk in Newark about Vandenberg, the young pitcher that was so hot at the time. And I'd won seven in a row, and I only lost one ball game when I played against St. Paul. I lost that after 6-7 innings.
Yeah.
But I didn't get a chance. Donnie Bush, who was the manager of the Minneapolis club in 32, didn't pitch me in the World Series, a little World Series at all, which was a big disappointment to me, because I figured I could, you know, could be a winner.
And why do you suppose that did? Huh? Why do you think that happened?
I don't know. The Donnie Bush went for the old ball players, you know, like Rube Benton and Rosie Ryan. Reminds me of a game at the Toledo where they come out to take me out of the ball game in the seventh inning, and I had them shut out. And Toledo had a hard-hitting ball club. Mm-hmm. And there were three hitters in a row there that I took out in the seventh inning with the bases loaded, because I refused to walk off the mound to take out a ball game when they want to take me out of the ball game. And I looked down the bullpen, and Rosie Ryan, who I was rooming with, come home 4 o'clock in the morning, half stiff, and he was down there warming up, and I says, "Oh no." And I walked over towards first base, and I wouldn't walk out off the field. So they gave up, and they went back and sat down and let the kid go out there and knock his brains out. Mm-hmm. Well, I shut him out the next two innings, and I won the ball game 3-0, I think it was. Mm-hmm. But I saw Rosie Ryan down there warming up, because he'd come in late that night, and he was gurgling and choking and everything. Snoring, and I couldn't sleep. 5 o'clock in the morning, I went down and had breakfast.
Yeah.
So I sat down and read newspapers in the morning.
Yeah.
That was one incident. Where do we go from here?
Well, let's go 33, 34, and then 35, right up until you went to the Red Sox.
Well, that was the end of the 32 season. 33, Donnie Bush went up to, I don't know, I think he went to Cincinnati to manage that one season there.
Uh-huh.
And then I didn't do much with Dave Badenkoff during that time. He was managing the club.
Okay.
So I was just sitting on the bench most of the time. And then when the 34 season started, Donnie Bush come back, and I was quite enthused. I thought, well, I'll get a chance to pitch now.
Uh-huh.
Well, I didn't. So 34, they sent me up. Mike Kelly, they sent me up to the office, and Mike Kelly called, said he wanted me up to the office. So I went up to the office, and Mike says, "You get packed up." He says, "You're going to join the Boston Red Sox." Gee, that's great.
Yeah.
You know, without any, I thought, you know, with Donnie Bush back, that I'd get a good chance to, you know, establish myself. But here I go up to Boston Red Sox, a green pea, and sitting on the bench with all the big wheels there.
Mm-hmm.
But when I come out of that one ball game that I've explained to you once before.
Yeah, the very first game you pitched was against
New York
Yankees.
Yeah, the Yanks. Here, the Boston Red Sox they were trying to get enough big league pitchers, you know, on the bench, and they'd had them.
Yeah.
And I think you recall some of the pitchers at that time.
Well, did Boston had?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they had Lefty Grove.
Yeah, Lefty Grove was one of them.
That was pretty.
He's the one that said to me that, "Don't feel bad, son." He said, "They had $1 million worth of pitchers out there, and we couldn't get them out." So I didn't feel so bad after that.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me about the story with Tony Lazzeri.
About what?
Tony Lazzeri, your first game. Yeah, go ahead and tell that one.
Yeah, well, the game I pitched in against the Yankees, I shoved in there after they murdered every pitcher on the Boston Red Sox. And I had Lazzeri up there, and they got a few hits off me. In fact, Gary hit a dribbler off me,
mm-hmm.
past the second baseman who covered second. I don't know what the hell he left his position for, but dribbled through the infield.
Yeah.
And well, Gary was in that sickness at that time coming on.
Yeah.
And he was quite a guy. But Rick Farrell was the catcher. And I had Lazzeri up there in the ninth inning, and I wanted to throw a curveball, but he kept snapping a fastball sign, fastball. And he really jabbed it into the ground, you know. Yeah. And I said, well, if he wants it, I guess I'll have to throw. So I reared back and cut loose with everything I had. Lazzeri hit a ball so hard that he put a dent in a sign up on the roof in the center field. And I said, that was my debut.
Yeah.
But then after 28 days with the... Well, the funny part of it is when I went to from Minneapolis to the Boston Red Sox, I didn't get a release slip or anything. Usually you get an outright release or sold outright. I never got anything. They just sent me up there. I was with them. If they'd have kept me 2 more days, 28 days, they sent me down to Syracuse.
Right.
And from there on, I was covered up somewhere. I was too hot to handle. Couldn't stay with the ball club because I had meetings with Judge Landis, you know, 3 meetings. And he told me 2 times, he said, if I ever lay my hand, fingers on it and catch up with him, he said, you'll be a free agent, Mr. Vandenberg. And I said, Judge, I said, you go ahead and get him. I said, I'll just soon be a free agent. He smiled. He was a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, was he shrewd. Well, he's a criminal lawyer, you know, and he could be telling you a joke and then ask you a question. You better answer that damn thing and be right.
Yeah.
Because that was his way of working around. But I really admired him.
Did you have any other dealings with Landis over the years?
No. I thought maybe after I had that, I had a fight with the general manager when I was sold from Syracuse to Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
I got in a, it ended up the end of the season. Said, yeah, I laid down on him because I was sold to the Giants. But I come up the next year, went in his office to see why I didn't get part of my sale price when they sold me to the New York Giants. And he said, I told you, what the hell is the name? John, tap it a minute. John Ogden told me that he said he'd give me a screw-in on my sale price. And that's when I wasn't going to report the year before, you know, because I told my wife, I said, he told me he was going to give me a screw-in. I said, I got nothing on papers, stating that he promised me I'd get $10,000 my sale price. But I never got it. So the next year when I was back with Jersey City, I got knocked out of a ball game. And I was pretty hot under the collar, you know, and I went into the office and told John Ogden, I said, how come I didn't get that $10,000 that I was promised? He says, promises don't go. He says, you have to write them on paper. And that's when I hit him a punch in the mouth, knocked him off the chair.
Oh, boy.
I got $10,000 worth of skin off of him. And I beat him up all over his office that night. And then Curly Ogden, his brother was trying to get in the ballpark. The front gate was locked. But when I come out, I was straightening up my coat and everything, and walking around. And I saw this guy trying to get up there. And then here comes Curly Ogden. I didn't know who he was.
Mm-hmm.
Some guy got attacked me. Well, I dropped him too on the sidewalk.
Oh, boy.
So I whipped both the brothers.
Both Ogden brothers in one night.
Yeah, one night. But the next day was at Andy. Well, the trainer of the Baltimore Ball Club, him and I were very good friends, you know, when I was with Baltimore. And he said, what the hell did you do to John Ogden last night? I said, I took $10,000 worth of meat off him for that $10,000 he owed me. And he said, well, you sure did a good job. He came out there and his arm was bandaged up and I don't know what the hell happened to his arm. He must have fell on him when he hit the floor.
Yeah.
So next day under the stands, I was standing there. See, he has to come from his office, go by our door to the club, the other club's door.
Mm-hmm.
And he came walking up there, and he kind of looked at me, and I said something, and I called him a dirty name.
Uh-huh.
And I wheeled out of there. I was talking to a guy that I roomed with, you know, his rooming house. And he jumped back, and I took a wing at him, and I got him up against the building there, and I just whopped it to him. And all I could do was say, I just boom, boom, as it didn't happen. So he went to the hospital. So the ball game started, and about when the game ended, well, there's some fellas up in the box seats, a bunch of hooligans. They'll get you, Vandenberg. They're going to get me. And I said, yeah, well, I'll get you first. I said, hey, you guys got any guts? Come on out here now. I had a fungal bat in my ass, so I dare you to come out. And nobody come out.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the game ended, I picked up that fungal bat again. I figured going underneath the stands, they'd be waiting for me, and I'm going to whittle every damn one of them. I wouldn't let up.
Uh-huh.
And that was my Dutch temper. So here come six big cops. They were big guys. And a lieutenant or captain of police. Where's Vandenberg? And I said, there I am. He says, get in here. There's three on each side, him and leading the captain or whatever he was, the lieutenant. And they took me out down through there, and I'm walking around. Here's a bunch underneath there. I'll get you, Vandenberg. I'll get you. I said, well, what are you going to do, put me in jail? He says, no, we're shipping you out of town. You raised too much hell around here for two nights. So, you know, they sat and waited until I changed clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took me down in a squad car. And I went to the hotel, got my stuff and everything. And I told him, I said, call somebody or somebody to get me my ticket back to New York. So they went down even to the station to see that I got on the train and made damn sure I didn't get off on the other side. So I ended up in New York. Then Shag Shaughnessy, who was the big wheel of the International League,
mm-hmm.
and hell of a nice guy, you know, he liked me too because I pitched good ball against his team all the time. He admired me for it, Shag Shaughnessy. And I had a meeting with Shag Shaughnessy, Bill Terry, and I don't know, some other guy sitting there. And I figured I was through with baseball then because I beat up on one of the general managers. But I explained it to him, told him exactly what happened. I said, what he come out to the ballpark and handed one of the ball players that was sold at the same time I was from Baltimore. Came up, gave him money, but he didn't give me my share that he promised me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's where all the trouble started. And I said, he made a remark, and I called him a name, and he swung at me, and I said, I dropped him. Because he went over that swivel chair, just boom, boom, boom.
I can still see it today. Yeah.
Come up and go, and I ran him all around. Some pictures fell off the wall.
Yeah.
Had his head up in his goddamn thing, bang, I whopped him right on the button. But he'd come up again. I guess I was getting weak. Well, he staggered pretty good.
Well, you're a pretty good sized guy. About 6'3" and 200 pounds?
215, good shape. Well, uh-huh. I kept in good shape all the time. And I'm used to fighting because I've been in so damn many fist fights, it wasn't even funny. Because I've had ball players challenge me, you know, after I dust them off. Can start out like they're doing now.
Yeah.
Some of these colored boys right out now. I'd run and jump at them with my spike fit like that. I'd go and meet them. Every time some guy dropped his bat and was going to turn around and he'd come out, then turn and go to first base. I said, well, if you're going to come out here, I said, keep on coming.
Yeah.
I said, don't stop. And he said, oh, you throw it at me. I said, yeah, you come up the next time, I'm going to knock you right in your ass. I tell him that. Did you get that on there?
That's quite all right. It's quite all right. I just want to go back to Boston just for a second, just ask you a couple of questions about We only just had about 5 innings, I guess, with the Red Sox in those 28 days. But the manager was Joe Cronin. How'd you get along with him?
Cronin?
Yeah, did he like you or he didn't like you or indifferent? Or?
No, he was nice to me, but there's something up because if they'd have kept me 2 more days, they'd have to keep me on the bench all season, mm-hmm. which would have been good for me because I'd probably learned something with those pitchers up there. They never taught me a damn thing in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Donnie Bush, I gave up. When he came back from Cincinnati, he told me that, when you're going to pitch my way, he says, you're not going to pitch at all. Come out, you know, out of a clear sky. And I looked at him, you know, I was so enthusiastic, and I gave him 100%.
Yeah.
Boy, after that pitch is, I said, well, I can pitch any way you want to. I said, how do you want me to pitch? He says, you stand straight on the mound. He said, take the ball and throw it. I said, can I pivot? No. Well, what the hell kind of coaching is that? I said, what was he, a shortstop or some damn thing?
Yeah, shortstop, I believe.
Yeah. And he's a grumpy little old soul anyway. And so he didn't pitch me. So when the season was over, boom, ship into Boston Red Sox.
Well, there's,
that's what happened there.
Well, I mean, with the Red Sox, there's not a lot you can learn or they can learn from you if they only let you pitch 5 innings in 28 days.
Yeah, well, I think that was the only game I was in.
Yeah, just one game, huh?
Just one game. And then I couldn't pitch the way I wanted to. But I'll tell you a story about that. With Lazzeri, after he hit that home run off me, I never forgot him. He was sent over to manage when he left New York. He took the job as a manager of Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a powerhouse club over there. They had 2 big outfielders, and I beat him. But Lazzeri, to show you that I wanted to throw that curveball to Lazzeri from sidearm, if I'd have thrown that there, I could have struck him out. You know, I struck him out. He was still playing. He played third base on the Montreal club. Or no, Toronto club. What the hell am I talking about? Toronto, on the Toronto ball club. And he came up to the plate, and I struck him out. Got up to play it again. 4 times I struck him out. The curveball.
Hmm.
He couldn't hit a curveball.
Couldn't hit your curveball, huh?
Fast inside.
Yeah.
Nice, fast. But I struck my curveball way out back. I'd break a lot of bats, you know, with that fastball inside. And I see once in a while a fella gets some balls inside. These guys broke a couple of bats, and they can't pull in. You know, when they pull in, they take their power away.
Yeah.
And my fastball from sidearm dives into a right-hander. And that's why they got breaking curveball. And I threw even overhead curveballs for those corners.
I want to ask you about the guy that was on the Red Sox when you were there, Mo Berg.
Mo Berg?
Yeah, tell me about him.
Mo Berg, he could talk Japanese very, very fluently.
He spoke 7 or 8 languages, that's what I understand.
He was a great guy. He had a good education. And we had a big blackboard, you know, in the training quarter, in the
clubhouse.
Room. What?
In the clubhouse, or?
In the clubhouse, had a big. This Japanese fella from Japan came in there, and Mo Berg said something in Japanese to him. He laughed, and he says, "Him very good, him very good." And so he wrote a thing on there in Japanese. Wrote it across there. He said, him very good. Now, I don't know who the Japanese guy was, but mm-hmm. Moberg, Moberg was a kind of a jolly sort of a person and a good catcher.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting guy. He was spy and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that tickled me when I had a chance to pitch against Lazzeri over there at Toronto.
How about one other guy for the Red Sox? We talked a little bit about Rick Farrell. What about his brother, Wes? I guess Wes was kind of
Farrell had a temper.
He was a hothead too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was really a hot-headed. Even on the golf course, you know, he'd take if he made a bad shot with the club, he'd bend it over his knee or throw it into the swamp or the lake.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a good hitter, though.
Good hitter.
Yeah.
And pretty good pitcher, too.
Yeah,
he won 20 games with the Red Sox for, I think he had 21 seasons.
He was a good pitcher, yeah. But I never got a chance to see much of him, you know.
Yeah.
I know the first time I thought I was supposed to go into a game, you know, in New York City again. And I walked down through from our clubhouse, and the beer kegs, beer boxes lined all the way. I walked and walked. I said, where the hell is the place where the pitchers come out of there? So I kept going until finally it opened up out there. But I never saw so many beer cases in my life as I did in the Yankee Stadium. What is his name there that had the club? The Bush or something, not Bush.
No, Yankee Stadium?
Yeah.
The guy that owned the Yankees. Oh, boy, the name escapes me, too. Remember, a little bit later on, maybe, I don't know if it's the same time.
I think he was a beer baron, too.
I just remember Del Webb and Dan Topping, but that was later. It escapes me.
Yeah. Is that still going? Well, I was going from the New York Giants. Damn it. Okay. Well, I went from Baltimore. I sold the New York Giants. And I don't know, Bill Terry must have made some promise with Mayor Haig that he'd give him some ball players to, because the mayor wanted to win a pennant, you know. Mm-hmm. And they had a beautiful ballpark. That was strictly big league. And that's where I pitched shutouts, you know. Yeah, every park before was a little tiny ballpark, you know, like Minneapolis, mm-hmm. and Syracuse and Baltimore. God, what a despicable place.
You talking about the Polo Grounds or?
No.
In New York?
That was Baltimore where they had the small.
I was talking about, you said New York had a real nice ballpark. I'm just asking, is that the Polo Grounds that you're talking about?
I mean, the Jersey City was, strictly big league.
Oh, Jersey City, okay.
Yeah, Jersey City. That Mayor Haig was the mayor, and he's the big power there in that territory. So, Terry promised him he'd send him enough ball players to have a good ball club. So who goes over there? Vandenberg was first thing, and George Mayat, mm-hmm. shortstop. So we happen to be the friendly brothers of the mayor, you know, yeah. because he adopted us. We were the ones that touched it. But the Mayor Haig, you got to go on there. Mayor Haig. One of the championship ball club, and he was going to get it come hell and high water. So he sent George Mayat May over to Jersey City. And I'd winning right away. I won 15, I should have had 25, should have won 20 or 25 games, but I tore a muscle in my side later on, just later on. But at that time, Terry needed help back there, you know, in the major league, and he called us back, and then the mayor got mad because he sent out tickets, you know, to all the saloons and everything, mm-hmm. and they asked him, "Jesus, mayor, what are we supposed to do?" He says, "Give them to your friends, pay for them, and give them to your friends." And he loaded the ballpark for opening day. He promised Terry that he had an opening day. He'd load that park, and that's a big park.
Yeah.
So the mayor kept his part of the bargain, but from then on, he was after him all the time. They called me back from, Terry sent us back over there, you know, Mayat, and we'd be winning games, you know, in Jersey City, and Newark was always our big battle, but we got, Terry called, and I'd take Mayat and me back again. Geez, the mayor, he'd raise hell. Well, I went home and reported. We got on the train and went down to St. Louis, put on a uniform, walked out in the field, both Mayat and I. One of the ball players comes and says, "Terry wants to see you and Mayat in the clubhouse." And I was really hollering at the collar. I said, "What the hell? They just keep me right out of the big leagues, you know." And Terry says, I'm sending you back to Jersey City. And I walked alongside him. I said, hot under the collar then. I said, what the hell's coming on? And he says, just report. I said, well, thanks for the ride, Bill. So I took Matt by the hand and said, come on, Sonny, let's go back to Jersey City. The mayor wants us. And after we won the pennant, you know, in Jersey City there, Mayor Haig was going to give us a car apiece, Matt and I. Then as a wristwatch. Then he got pissed off at... He got teed off about the people sticking their nose in his business. So he canceled out everything, so we were gone.
Just in 37, you were with the Giants part of the year, but the Giants wound up in first place.
Yeah.
Now, you weren't...
No, they won the pennant that
you were
year
with the
before.
Team.
I come up at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And they won the pennant that year.
Right, but you weren't on
no,
the...
No, I was sold. Terry came down to Baltimore and looked at I pitched a hell of a ball game that night. I can't remember the Jewish fellow. What the hell was his name? That's some names written down someplace. Yeah, Phil Weintraub. Terry came down to look over some pictures and for the Giants. And that night I struck out Weintraub, who was leading the league with 348, somewhere around that. And everything was a two base hit or line drives, two or three base hits, and he was just burning the league up with hitting. And he kind of licks his chops when he comes into into our ballpark, because it's such a small, measly ballpark, you know, all wooden bleachers and stuff.
Yeah.
And he came up the plate and I threw balls right on by him. But I wouldn't let him time me. He had I sat and watched him one time, and when you start winding up, he'd have that bat moving with you. As you come around, you come down, he could either come fast or slow. And he hit the hell out of the ball. Well, I threw balls right by him, boom, boom, boom. Just real fast, you know, I didn't move around. I come up and I see a bat coming out, drop my hands again, start again, and he... I had him breaking his rhythm, sir. So, you know, cagey. So, four times he was up the plate, I struck him out four times in a row. Fastballs, right on the inside. And he was swinging, but he wasn't hitting anything. And after he joined the New York Giants when he came up, we were sitting at the table there, and he asked me, he says, you know, you're the only guy that ever struck me out four times in a row or struck me out consistently. He says, what do you do? I said, I just throw the ball by you. He says, you do more than that. So I told him, I said, you know, you used to start that. I said, Phil, you used to start your bat with a pitch of timing him, bringing your bat in and out. And then when he pitched and you were ready. I said, I broke you at rhythm on you. He said, I know now what you did. And he said, you struck me out four times in a row, and that's something no man has ever done before. And I said, well, thank you. He said, don't thank you. He says, I hate you. No, he didn't mean that. But he went in the ball game that day, and he hit two-line drive, and he come back, and I winked at him. He says, "You're right." He had his bat moving again. But then even when he's back there and set, he didn't have that freedom. So I guess that was it.
How'd you get along with Bill Terry?
Bill Terry? Terry's kind of a funny guy. I wasn't a Southerner to start with. But in fact, everybody on this club was Southerners. So I don't know whether that had anything to do with it. But I'd be warming up, you know, to go in the ball game, and he'd run Cliff Melton down, left-hander. And he knew damn well I could pitch the left-handers, but he had to have Melton in there. I thought Cliff didn't last very long.
No.
It was only a couple of years, I guess, when he went up. He could throw a ball hard and fast, too. He was pretty quick. I don't think he was any quicker than I was.
How hard do you think you threw? You know, you see now these guys, 95, 98. How hard do you think you threw?
Well, you know, I see these fellas, they say 94 miles an hour. I said, Jesus Christ, I must be, I shouldn't use that word, but I must have been throwing 94 to 100 miles an hour. Because when I pitched for Minneapolis, that's all they let me throw is a fastball. If I tried to do something else or change up or anything,
they wouldn't let you do it.
Throw that ball in here, you busher. You know, I was a busher. That's the way they treated you. So that's the way the ball bounced all the time.
I want to ask you about a couple of guys that you played with when you were with the Giants. Now, Lazzari, we talked about him before.
Who?
Tony Lazzari. He was with the Giants when you were there, right?
Who?
Tony Lazzari.
Oh, he was with the Yankees.
Oh, he was with, but later on he was with the Giants. When you were there, he was with the Giants in 38 or 39 or something like that. I don't know, maybe you guys weren't on the team at the same time. That's why I'm asking. But he was with Tony Lazzari, yeah.
No, he never, he played third base for the New York Yankees till he went to Toronto.
Anyway, we'll skip over Lazzari. Let's talk about a couple other guys, a couple of pitchers. Paul Dean was with the Giants for a little while.
Well, Paul Dean, yeah, he was with the Giants, but he didn't get in any of the games.
No.
Because we trained, I got pictures of him and I, because Paul was dizzy, but Paul is his brother, wasn't
right.
He? Paul pitched for Columbus before he went up.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't pitch against him at that time because I was still a busher. And he went up with his brother. So that was all to that.
Mm-hmm. Pretty nice guy though. Was he quiet? He wasn't like Dizzy at all?
Or? Nothing like Dizzy. Dizzy was
outspoken.
Outspoken and really cocky.
How about
He could afford to.
How about Freddie Fitzsimmons?
Fitzsimmons?
Yeah, he was with the Giants back then.
Yeah.
Fat Freddie, remember he big guy and had a bad arm or a crooked arm or something like that?
No, he wasn't there then when I was there. Fitzsimmons, no.
Freddie Fitzsimmons, don't remember, huh?
No, he wasn't.
How about two other guys? How about Dick Bartel?
No. Not when I was there.
How about Burgess Whitehead? Do you remember him?
Yeah.
What do you remember? What do you remember about him?
I don't know what the hell happened to Burgess Whitehead. Something happened to him, and he kind of went goofy.
Yeah, he had a nervous breakdown.
He going in buying shoes. Geez, he bought I don't know how many hundred pairs of shoes he bought.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what. He was a hell of a nice kid, and one hell of a shortstop. But he went goofy there for a while, I guess.
Now, in 1940, I don't know if you were at the Giants at the time or not, but do you remember Willard Hershberger, catcher for the Reds?
No, catcher.
Were you with the Giants?
I was with the time.
There was that one game in particular. I'm not exactly. It was sometime, I believe, in July, and Hershberger was the Reds. He was with the Reds, I believe. Reds or Brooklyn? That escapes me now. But
well, I don't know where he came from, but he was a catcher.
Yeah, I believe it was.
He was a small guy.
Yeah, I believe it was the Reds.
He cut his wrist and bled to death and put his arms in the bathtub.
Right. That was all because of a game that they played against the Giants. I just wondered if he was with the Giants at that time or not. It was a game where the Cincinnati was ahead 4-1 going to the bottom of the ninth, and they had, and the Giants scored four runs and won the game 5-4.
I didn't pay to catch him or some damn thing. I don't know what it was. There's so many things said, but he was a neat kid. He didn't get any blood around any place else but in the bathtub.
Yeah.
That's what we heard.
Yeah. Pretty good hitter, though, from what I recall.
Yeah, things like that I felt bad about, because he was a really a nice boy.
Yeah.
A young fellow. Mm-hmm. But why he committed suicide, I don't know. He cut his wrist and sat there and let him blaze.
Must have thought he failed somebody. Hi, how'd you get from the Giants then, 1940, your last year with the Giants? Tell me how you got from the Giants all the way to the Cubs.
Well, what happened with all that stuff going on between Jersey City and the New York Giants, I guess Terry got tired of it, and he sold me to St. Louis Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
And that, what year was that?
1941.
Yeah, 41. I went to the Cardinals. I figured, well, I'm starting to make the rounds now. And still, I never got an outright release or anything. Your contract was turned over to such a club, and that's where the cover up, because I don't want to go back to something else again.
Well, go ahead.
That takes me back to Syracuse, where Twitchy Porter was made manager of Syracuse, where I played ball before.
Yeah.
And when I got over to Syracuse, when I was in Jersey City, he was talking to me. He says, "Hi," he says, "you ought to go upstairs there." He said, "There's something in the safe up there. Looks pretty damn screwy." He says, "Don't look right." Because I know the fellow that owns the Syracuse then, he's the one that stole the franchise from another little town there in Albany.
Albany.
He got the whole damn works from Albany. He stole it, I guess, from what I heard. What you hear and what you know is a lot of difference. But he come up and pat me on the back, you know, I can't remember his name. And he says, "I own you now." I says, "You own me." So outright he told me he purchased me by saying that.
Mm-hmm.
So Twitchy Porter told me, he says, "Hey," he says, "you ought to get up in the Syracuse office there in that big safe of his." He says, "Some papers there look kind of queer and funny." He says, "Don't know." He says, "I think you could be a free agent." And I said, "Well, how the hell am I going to get up there and look at that?" And at that time, Judge Venice had died, I guess, in the meantime, somewhere in there.
Well, this is in the 30s. Syracuse was, what, 35 and 6 you played there?
Yeah.
Well, Landis died in 44, so he was still around.
Yeah. But I said, "Well, what the hell can I do about it? Nothing I can do, because I was too damn dumb when I first broke in. You know, I never knew anything about this getting outright released or outright sold.
Yeah.
Never gave me anything. So when I went to Boston, I got the same thing. They gave me tickets to go back to Syracuse. Said, "We're going to send you," that was our farm club then. So that was that, as far as I was concerned.
In 41 Rochester, you pitched pretty good. You had 5 shutouts, and you led the league, or tied for the league lead.
Tony, what was his name, managing then? Yeah, he was a hell of a nice guy to play for.
Was that, you talking about Lazzeri again, or?
About Rochester.
Wasn't Tony
Lazzeri. Is that who you were talking about?
Yeah, Rochester in 41.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the 1942, Milwaukee, and Bill Veeck was the owner of the team?
Well, Bill Veeck, he was a comedian when it come to putting on acts and everything for the ball club. We had a band with Charlie Grimm, and he completed the screwy shows. So we always had the fans laughing. But Veeck would be out in the field. We'd wrestle with him, you know, and fool around with him out there.
Mm-hmm.
He was an awfully nice fellow, you know. He was just like a big kid. And he always had those ideas, always jolly and smiling. Mm-hmm. But I like Bill Veeck.
Do you remember any particular stunts that he pulled during the year? Anything, any promotions or any gags that he pulled?
Well, we had a hillbilly with Charlie Grimm and myself and three of the other ball players. One played a violin, but that was put on a recording, yeah. And he just went through the motions. I had a drum that you tighten as you played it. So when we played the song, I kept right in with it, you know. Mm-hmm. It turned out real good. And everybody thought it was a hell of a, a, hell of a good band. We all looked like a bunch of hillbillies, you know. And it was funny when the fellow was playing the violin, I forget which ball player that was. He was stroking away real nice, and gee, he was playing a beautiful piece on the
violin.
Yeah.
It was all taped.
But Veeck lost that leg and everything. I don't know what caused that. But,
I think it was something to do. I think it hurt in the war or hurt somehow.
I don't think he was in the war, was he?
Well, it was hurt somehow. I just think it
before?
Just... Before?
Well, he had all of his faculties and everything when he was at Milwaukee.
It just got... I know the leg just got worse and worse and worse, and it just got to the point where the pain was bothering him. It was bothering him so much that he eventually just had it amputated. How about 43? It says that the books say that you voluntarily retired in 1943.
I don't know what that... I got the idea. I just got tired of baseball at the time. Mm-hmm. And I went back to Minneapolis and said, oh, to hell with baseball. I said, I'll retire. And, you know, getting shoved back and forth, it kind of got disgusting because, well, I was always aggressive out there, you know, and I loved to play baseball. But I don't know. I ended up in the Army Air Force purchasing department.
Mm-hmm.
And I was stationed at Minneapolis Honeywell, where I spent the whole winter. And then when spring came, I went back to baseball, and after I went back to Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I retired, because I just, you know, I got fed up with being... Then we had to train in Horse Barn, you know, and the government wouldn't allow us to travel.
Yeah, restrictions.
And I guess I hit all the bad spots in baseball. two World Wars. Jesus.
How'd you wind up with the Cubs?
I was too young for the First World War.
Yeah.
And I was too old for the second one.
Well, good timing.
Because I went out to put the Army, you know, and to Fort Snelling. And I went through all of that stuff up to the last doctor. And he told me, well, Mr. Vandenberg, he said, I'm sorry to do this, but he put a big X on the papers. And at that time, my wife was having her baby, you know. She was pregnant, mm-hmm. to have a baby. And I told one of these shining stars with a uniform on, a young fellow, it looked like a high school graduate.
Yeah.
But he was sitting at the... He asked me that when I come in there, he says, is that the reason you want to be in the Army? I said, what have I got to say about it? But before that, he was sitting at the table talking to a friend of his, and I'm out there bare naked waiting to get in there and shivering and everything.
Yeah.
And I was teed off about it anyway. But I went on and went through, and when he signed me out, the reason was that my age was against me. So up to 35, they wouldn't take anybody after that. Because
mm-hmm.
one of my friends went in the Army, he was gone a month, got a uniform and everything, and come back home and took his uniform away from him, and he was out of the Army.
Hmm.
Because he was 38 years old. But I don't know who the hell... Somebody blasted me and got me in there and said I was a shirker or something. I don't know who the hell did.
Yeah.
Some of the neighbors, you know, they got kids in the Army. What is Vandenberg doing out there playing ball and not in the Army? Hell, if I was of age and could go, I wouldn't mind it.
Yeah, you wouldn't mind, huh?
But I told this little guy sitting at the table, I said, I don't mind being in the Army. I said, but I would like to be out of the Army for about another, till my wife has her baby. And I said, that's only a month or so away. That has nothing to do with it. Mm. Oh boy, he had me hot as
a kid. Uncle Sam calls, he calls, huh?
Yeah.
Well, then how'd you get to the Cubs?
How'd I get to the Cubs?
Was it Cubs, not taking anything away from you?
I went to Milwaukee. I don't know how the hell I got to the Cubs.
You just wound up there one day.
I belonged to...
Were you still property in Milwaukee at the time? Or?
I think maybe I was. I can't remember so far back. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what happened there.
Well, anyway, you got to...
Milwaukee got me and Charlie Grimm. I was glad to be back. We had those... stupid looking uniforms they had. they were wild. But I was only with them a little bit, and boom, right up to Chicago. Mm-hmm. They wanted help, and I got up there, and I didn't pitch right away. But then when Charlie Grimm came up, then I started pitching.
Yeah.
I don't know. So Charlie was manager of Milwaukee then. Yeah. And he called me aside, he said, I'm sending you up to the Cubs, I need help. And I said, fine. So I got up there, and then Charlie came,
and things were good.
The one thing, I remember sitting on the bench, you know, I've been in so many games, you know, about 44. I pitched, you know, day in and day out. Mm-hmm. I even pitched a full game, and then relieved the next day again. But if Charlie would have used me in the World Series, started me in that game, we'd have won that then.
You talking about the last game?
Yeah, the last game. I won that ring so damn bad, just let me get in there. But you can't just go and walk in the play. Dude.
What was the difference, high between the team in 1944 and 1945? How did they go from fourth place one year and then win the National League the next?
We had a big meeting Charlie Grimm's gentleman's farm, and he had a big mob of people there, friends and everything. We'd got into first division, and he was making a speech, and he pointed to me. He said, "Well, there's the fellow responsible for us finishing in first division this year." He said, "We're mighty proud of him." And I thought, gee, does that come out of a clear sky? And Charlie Grimm up there saying that there about me, and I didn't know a damn thing about it. But I appreciated it. And I give him 100% all the time. And he knows it too. Because in 45, I pitched so many times in a row that he told me that one day, he says, "God damn it," he says, "get out of uniform, go someplace, go to a show, go somewhere. Do something else." He says, "Get out of the ballpark." He says, you deserve it. He says, "I ain't going to work you today." Well, I at the clubhouse, I put my uniform on. I went and got a couple of bags of peanuts. I'm sitting way down at the other end, away from everybody, you know, eating peanuts, enjoying the ball game. Charlie started looking up and down. Here's these goddamn pictures. Pushing back, you know, so Charlie wouldn't see him. I said, "Man, I'll give you a couple, Charlie." Son of a bitch, go on down there, man. But then, goddammit, when that general manager, Gallagher, sent me out to the Coast League, mm-hmm. he sent me as far away from Chicago as he could because he was afraid of me. Because I didn't like him anyway, and he didn't like me. But he admired me for one thing. When I struck out the big schnoz Lombardi, he says, "I remember when you struck out the big schnoz Lombardi." He said, "Made me very happy." I said, "Well, how about raising that salary now?" Well, he wouldn't give it to me, you know. Either sign or stay home. Well, he asked me which way I was going. I said, "I'm going back to Minneapolis," and I did. Well, got pretty close to spring training, you know, and they wanted to be in camp real bad. I guess Charlie was hauling for me. And so I met my salary at $8,000. It wasn't much. It sounded like a lot then, but it was compared to what these guys do now. Get pushing.
Sorry.
Come here. Come here, too. Tina, what do you want? You want to go pee-pee, huh? Ask me something.
Well, the series in 45, you told me that you thought that if you started the last game, they'd have won.
Yeah, I had confidence enough in myself because I was pitching such good ball with my screwball and sinker and everything. I was a complete pitcher then because I walked in there and stopped them cold. But I never got called. But after they went through the last game, well, three games that I was in. One of the first game, there was one out and bases loaded. And I retired the side without a hit. And then they put in another pitcher, and I don't know what the hell he did that for. But then the next game, bases loaded, nobody out. And I retired the side with the four outs.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next game, the last game, with the bases loaded, nobody out, and runs were behind, they're just knocking the crap out of the pitcher. He said another pitcher again.
Yeah.
And I retired the side. I pitched those three games there and retired the side each time without a hit,
mm-hmm.
and without a run. But allowed one hit after I even got the plate to swing a bat, and I hit a line drive to the right fielder, because
mm-hmm.
I was always a good hitter, you know. And Charlie knew that too, because he used me. Pittsburgh, I hit a line drive, I believe it killed one of the infielders. They tried to field it. I never hit a ball so hard in all my life. Jesus. I got a three base hit out of it. If I was in good shape the first game I was in that year, because I've been holding out, you know, and I finally got word that report. But that's the way the ball bounced. And
but you're pretty disappointed when the Tigers won that last game?
Oh, I was disappointed. Ever since I was in the grade school, I used to think, gee, it'd be great to be in a championship game like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dream from my boyhood, from seventh grade and grade school, was thinking about that, to finally get in a World Series. And, you know, to me, it was just like pitching it against another Sunday school class. That's the way I felt.
Yeah.
That's the confidence I had.
Well, you pitched awfully well. Six innings,
hit in six innings and pitched in three games. But he'd been better off. He'd have, you know, yanked Barroi. I beat him every time when he was at Newark and I was at Jersey City. Well, it was a close game, 3-0, 2-1, 3-2. And Barroi, he could only pitch one game in about 4 or 5 days because he's got fingers that bleed or some damn thing.
Blisters?
He had a stone he used to rub his fingers into toughen them.
Yeah.
I think he run them down to the thin skin.
No skin left, then.
Eh? Yeah.
Well, then, 45 now, at the end of the 45 season, the World Series is over, and I know you played a little bit longer. You said that the general manager sent you out to Pacific Coast League next year.
Well, I went back to spring training. The next spring,
okay.
46. I'm working. Oh, Jesus, I told him, I told Charlie, I said, I want a lot of work. I said, I'm going to have one good year. And I said, I want to get all the practice in I can. I worked like a dog. And then when we broke spring training, Charlie called me in, our traveling manager. He told me, You're being sent to Oakland, and that's where Casey Stengel was managing that year before I went to the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I hadn't tore the muscle in the back of my cheek out of my ass, that's all year. You can't pitch.
Yeah.
You know, you're done for the season. And I really popped that. I was running so good, you know, and Jesus was going for a fly ball, and just I reached, pop, and I slid, and I got greased there. My arms were all grass stain, my uniform was grass stain. I was sliding. Like I say, I was in damn good shape, and I kept in shape all the time. But that played me up after I won the first game against Los Angeles. I shut them out 3-0. And Casey came out caught me coming off the mound, shook my hand. He said, I told those sons of bitches up there in the office I got a shutout pitcher. And he was so proud of me, you know, because he wanted me. I pitched good ball against his club, you know, when I was with the Giants, when he was managing up there in Philadelphia. So Casey was a great guy to play for.
You have any more Casey stories you want to tell?
No, I don't know. Casey had to get a kick out of his, you know, the language he used at the time. He was funny, but he was good. He was good with his fellas, and he was smart. He was no dummy out there. He knew what he was doing. You give him the ball players, and he'll play you a hell of a ball game.
Oh, you proved that. So anyway, how do we go now from Oakland to when did you finish up playing ball?
Well, at the end of the season, Casey put me in a game against L.A. And I was got into the fourth inning, and then some guy laid down a bunt, and a run picked it up, and I popped up out again. Then I was done. Casey sent me back to the, he knew I was through for the year.
Yeah.
He says, you might as well go on home. I says, okay. So if that ended my career with that. Then in the spring, they wanted to sell me down to some Texas league somewhere. Hell, I wouldn't go down to the minor league.
Yeah.
Christ, I was able and capable of pitching double-A baseball or even big league baseball.
Right.
But I didn't get that chance. That was disappointing in my life, too. That's why I tore my contract up, refused to report, to go to hell.
You'd had enough, huh?
I had enough. Been covered up all the way through, and if Lannis could have found out where the mistake was, why I'd have been a free agent, and they had a $50,000 price tag on me at one time.
Hmm.
So if I was worth $50,000, I was worth, you know, the club could be fined a hell of a lot, you know, for, especially that manager. I don't know how the hell he ever got me, because he didn't have a damn nickel. He stole the Albany franchise. And he comes up and passed me on the back in the middle of the season and said, yeah, I own you now. He's proud to have you, too.
Yeah.
He should. We won a pennant for him. We won the Governor Cup Series. I pitched the first game. Croner hit a home run to win the ball game for us. And I shut the door in their face and ran out.
You played on that. We were downstairs looking at the pictures, and it seemed like every team that you played on just about won the league
title. Every team I've been on. Very few teams I haven't, that I wasn't a starting pitcher or assisted in winning a championship.
Mm-hmm.